Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 357, I chat with electronic musician David Miles Huber about his latest recording and how he produced several different mixes, including Oro 3D. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded June 8th, 2017. Episode 357, Mixing Music to Chill By. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek and editor of AVSForum.com. This week's guest geek is David Miles Huber, Grammy nominee for surround sound production, and he recently completed an album called Gamma, which is mixed in Oro 3D immersive sound, among others, which we'll talk about. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. It's awesome to be here.
Really happy to have you here. Those who are tuned in live at live.twit.tv can join the chat room there. Or at irc.twit.tv, and you can post questions as we go, and I'll pass along as many as I can. Always helps if you put my screen name in the message, anywhere in the message. My screen name is my name, Scott Wilkinson. No dots or dashes or spaces or anything like that. That way it shows up in a different color and I can see it more easily. Also, I want to make sure everybody knows that in about a week and a half or so, closer to a week from now, on June 16th, Friday, June 16th, I will be up in the TWiT studios in Petaluma co-hosting the new Screensavers, which will be recording at 6 p.m. And I'm hoping to answer a couple of audio video questions while I'm there. So if you have any such questions, sure would love it if you submit them to newscreensavers@twit.tv. We'll pick a couple and answer them on the show. So I do hope you will consider sending in a question. So, David, we want to talk today mostly about your new album called Gamma, capital G-A-M, lower M, capital A. And I'd love for you to tell us about the recording and producing of this album. First of all, where does that title come from? Is it just, you know, capitalization for fun and profit or what?
Ooh, really good question. first of all, let me start off with my first of all is okay. I have never, ever, ever talked with the sort of the home audio community. And this is my first time talking. I'm a pro audio guy. And so this is awesome for me to be able to talk with people in home and theater audio. This is very, very cool.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that. And I have to say to everybody that actually I have known David for many years when I was the technical editor of Electronic Musician magazine, which is a prosumer kind of magazine. David, you had written a number of articles that passed by my desk. So we've actually known each other for a long time. Has been quite a while since then, but
very, very cool.
I'm very glad to have you on now to talk about your work for consumers.
So to answer your question then is where does gamma come from? And gamma is a light wave. I've heard it's actually a pretty destructive light wave. I'm not a physicist, but it's all this powerful stuff. But this is not where it came from. It simply came from the idea of light. I based this project on the idea of light, and it's different colors. So if you can see the disc and stuff, it's like there are a bunch of different colors. So it was based around just the idea of light, and that's where the name Gamma came from. The lowercase was just for the fun of it.
Just for the fun of it. All right. You can see I'm way into color too. I mean, you can see my my clock over here and stuff like that. So I'm totally into that as well.
Very cool. You're missing the what is it, the unicorn, the color unicorn. But other than that, you got it.
I'll leave the unicorn to others. That's okay. All right. So you wanted to make an album of music that reflects, pardon the pun, you know, how perhaps some elements or aspects of light. So how did you start conceiving it? How did you start working on it?
Oh, boy, here comes the really interesting stuff is a lot of this stuff came from earlier. My original website was 51bpm.com. And if you pull up 51bpm.com, then you don't have to type davidmileshuber.com. Hmm. But 51bpm, as you know, is sort of slow. And I like it that way. It was relaxational. I started out in relaxational music. And
what we might call ambient or
at that time new wave, right?
Okay.
And so doing new wave or relaxational chill music. And you'd know from we'll talk later about the chill mixes. This is where the concept of the chill mixes came from. So they actually started out with being chill mixes at a slower tempo. And it's sort of like, you float through. And that float through element in music is important to me. It's that idea of yes, you can relax. You don't have to go at 160 BPM and just, you know. Sometimes if you're at home and you come home from work, or if you're driving, you know, and you're getting up in the morning, you don't want to be going full out. You want to just have it like nice and slow. And my original stuff that I did, the first albums that I did for Laserlight down in LA, and those little suckers sold over a million copies. So the first things that I ever did sold over a million copies. And they were, it was relaxational projects, and I loved doing it. And I have some gear here, hardware gear that just loves to go at that slow tempo and a really, really lush and beautiful. So I have a lot of my equipment is handpicked for that lusciousness at slow speeds. And that's where the basis of it all comes from is it starts from those chill mixes, really, if that sort of helps answer your question, which I forgot by now.
Well, just, you know, how did you start? How did you start working on it? And so you started from the point of view of, I want to make some chill mixes. I want to make some chill music. That will slow people down. And I appreciate that a lot. I love ambient music, more like soundscapes than anything else, particularly for doing yoga, meditation, stuff like that.
Exactly. Right now I'm going to pull up the 2.0 mixes of Radiance, for example. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I'll play it loud and you'll be able to hear.
Oh, okay.
If the computer is going to act right, which when you're on air, you're on air, it always screws up, you know, show and tell always screws up.
Of course. But,
so I'll turn it way up for you.
So we're only going to hear it through your headphone there.
I know. But so you just get that sort of like, just sort of float through aspect, which I do agree is really, it has its place and stuff. So. And that's where I start. And I will let you, instead of like continuing on, I'll let you ask questions.
Well, you can go on almost as long as you like. It's fine with me.
I can go on and on.
Go ahead.
Nope, you.
Okay. So I read on your website that you sort of started with stereo tracks. And you're working in a digital audio workstation, basically a piece of software running on a computer called Nuendo from a company called Steinberg.
Yes,
at least that's where you started, apparently.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, why did you start with stereo tracks? You said in your website it said like up to 80 of them.
Yeah, it can be a lot. You hit a big point. First of all, you hit a point, and if you realize what we just said in the last 5 minutes, you'll understand. It's relaxational music. You know what comes from that? It comes from nature recordings, from instruments, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what what is one thing that you can pull out of that is space, you know, that idea of space. I mean, there's that concept of space music and all that. But anyway, that idea of atmosphere and that space, and that space comes from a at least a stereo spread. And it starts from a stereo spread. So, you know, you have a synthesizer. That synthesizer has two outs. Are you going to record one out? No. You're going to record the two outs. You're going to have it be stereo, right? Of course.
Because the synthesizer actually can pan its sound between the two outputs. It's got a stereo output.
Exactly.
And so it's creating already a stereo mix of itself.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you go further. So now now you get into something which all of a sudden gets weirdly esoteric, and it's esoteric for no reason whatsoever. And that it's true. That idea of stereo recording, of putting a mic out. If you're recording a guitar, I will always put out two mics in what is called XY, which is in this fashion where it's like, and you're picking up the left from this side and the right from that side, and it's XY. And then, but if I record a vocal, you know, everybody else will put a single mic out, you know, like you have that mic in front of you, right? I have a single mic in front of me. But if I'm recording a vocal, I will actually have a stereo mic out in front. And you go, why? Why would you have a stereo mic?
Because that's exactly the way I would do it. Yeah, I'd say, why?
Why? Exactly. Why would you put a stereo? Because there is an actual natural spread. When you slight movements, echoes from the room, little things, it creates a spaciousness. When you're recording a guitar, if you're recording it with a single mic, you had that single mic pickup. If you're recording with stereo, all of a sudden that sound picks up and widens out. And then,
well, that makes sense to me in the sense that for the guitar, that makes sense to me because the guitar is a fairly relatively big thing. And sound is not only coming out of the sound hole, but from the entire body of the guitar. So I see exactly why recording a guitar with an XY microphone, two microphones, would create a sense of space with that one instrument. And I guess the same, I can see how the same thing would be true with a voice. I mean, you've got the sound coming out of the mouth, and that's a fairly small area, but it spreads out quickly. And it's affected by the head. We've talked about this on the show a number of times in terms of binaural recordings and head-related transfer functions and how the sound goes around the head. So the same thing could be true on the output as well as the input.
It's true, and it's really subtle, but it's there. And when you listen and you have a single mic, you know it's like pinpoint, and you put the stereo and it spreads out. It's not like wild, of course, not unless you're not unless you're the head shaker and all that stuff, but it's, which then you wouldn't want that. But anyway, so that stereo idea with the hardware sense, with the mics, with the nature recordings, which I actually do put nature recordings into the mixes, with everything, you know, there's this stereo spread. And I think that's one of the things why, you know, with getting into surround, one thing that might really interest you, Scott, is the idea that I do not pan. At all.
Really?
No. There is no panning in my mixes whatsoever at all.
So in other words, each of the stereo tracks that we've been talking about, stereo mic on a guitar, stereo vocals, stereo synthesizer, those are all two audio channels, and they're panned hard left and right and just leave it there?
You just leave it there, and the thing is, this is where you get into the idea of 80 tracks, because you have a lot of different things. I have things from different instruments coming in, and if you ask me, do I have a process? Do I have this grand scheme? The answer is hell no. it happens from intuition. I do everything from intuition, and so you get all these different stereo tracks, which one thing will answer another, and you get all this counterpoint all over the place. And you end up with like so many counterpoints that when you put that over the surround mix, it's really intriguing and really interesting. And if I can continue one thing
please,
further, Scott,
please,
this
please.
Is the, you know, this is why I'm 4-time Grammy nominated. And this is what sets me apart from a lot of mixers. I know maybe six mixers in the world who mix the way I do. And so what everybody does is, you know, everybody goes left and right, and then maybe a little bit of center, and then, you know, and then maybe reverb in the rear, right? And to me, that is a complete and absolute waste. What I literally like go for it everywhere, all the way around. It's like I basically mix bold. You know, the rear speakers are going just as much as the front because the information is moving around so much. It basically, you know, that idea of immersive, you are immersed. It puts you in the middle of a creation, you know, that is created for the medium, really.
Right, exactly. Well, a couple things come to mind. One is when you're mixing, I mean, you've got 80 some tracks or whatever, all stereo, but you have to then mix them into 2-channel, into 5.1 channel, or into immersive, and which we're going to talk about a little later. But don't you have to do some panning once you've gotten down to the mix stage?
Nope.
Wow. So you just hard assign them. This one goes in this speaker, that one goes in that speaker.
These ones go in these speakers, right? Mm. Because they're all stereo tracks.
They're all stereo, right. So they're all going to be in two speakers.
Exactly. And that stereo spread has its own mini atmosphere in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
You recorded the output of a synthesizer, it creates this atmosphere. And if you capture that atmosphere, it has that atmosphere. Instead of just this tiny little sound, it has this larger atmosphere. And so you have all these things that have these little micro atmospheres all over the place. Then you can add reverb to that. Then you can add delays, delays in surround and in Oro or whatever immersive mix you want to use is totally rocks because it's so much fun because for example, in one of the mixes, I literally had the kick in the rear, and it would answer, a delay would answer in the front center.
Ah. You know,
how many times would you ever hear something like that? You know,
very rare. I mean,
you can totally do that. You know, with the delays, you have the delays front going rear, rear going front. So you could have the sounds in the back where the delay would answer in the front, you know, in the rear going to the center, center going to the, you know, anything. And then there's also the idea of, there is the idea because even though they're stereo, sometimes you can pan the mono and make, for example, a bass sound is really cool where you had the bass and the, there's what is called a phantom center. An actual set in surround. There's phantom center, you know, where it's like, you know, you had them coming out. Everybody listens in stereo. By default, you're listening to phantom center, you know, because it's coming out of left and right, and then you hear it coming out of the center, right?
Right. If the particular sound is coming out of the left and right speakers equal level, then it appears to be coming out of the center.
Exactly. But then you can have actual center.
You can have surround. A real speaker there.
A real speaker there. So you have there actually is a difference between phantom center and actual center, and you can actually have those two play with each other.
Mm.
So
an interesting idea. I hadn't thought of that.
You have to be a surround mixer, and you have to be a crazy kind of surround mixer to think about this. So,
hey, well,
yeah.
Listen, I got a couple questions in the chat room already. One of them is from Hamid, who is very excited about today's show. And he has a stereo mic, an Audio Technica AT8022. And he wonders which one you have. You've said you use two microphones and an XY. Do you ever use a stereo mic? I myself have a Rode NT4 that I use sometimes.
Do I actually pull it? It's too much to pull it out. It's in the big box.
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
It's a big mic. But yes, I do have a stereo mic. I don't have that many need for mics because if I have a need for a mic, I'll go to a recording studio and use their mics, right?
Mics can be very expensive.
Exactly. And I just don't need mics. But I have my one baby, which is it's an MXL tube mic. And it's sort of a high-end puppy that really rocks and works in all sorts of applications. But if you, you know, and again, regarding microphones, you know, there are two ideas with mics. I say, like, one I call the Alan Seitz approach, where Alan Seitz, like, is a mic collector from, you know, he has $1 million mic collection and stuff. Yeah. And has every single mic for every single, you know, he has a microphone for a certain kind of cricket or something, right?
Yeah, right. He's actually been a guest on this show.
Well, there you go. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and then there's the other side of it, which is the cost-effective one, whereas you get a good pair of mics, or good four, maybe two pair of mics that work in a wide range of applications. And that way you don't have to spend, you know, you don't have to hawk the car to buy all sorts of microphones. You know, you can have just certain pairs of microphones. I always obviously I do things in stereo. You do pairs of microphones. So anyway, Hamid, yes, I do have the mics that I use. And if I do need other mics, then I go out to a recording studio.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find here it is. Drew Nielsen. Ask, so why stop at two mics? If you're recording something acoustic and you have two mics in an XY configuration or a stereo mic, such as the MPX, is that what it is that you have?
What? No, it's whatever. I don't know.
Whatever it is. MXR. That's what it is.
Oh, it's MXL, but anyway.
MXL, whatever. Anyway. So why stop at two?
He's right. He's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And this is where, and this is for, in this case, I would, okay, now we get, now I, some people want to have fun. I can tell you guys want to have fun.
I've got a very smart audience here. So
this is good. This is good. All right. Creating space.
Space.
A final space. Frontier.
Exactly. Okay. Let's take for, oh, how crazy do I get? And this is reality. Where's trying to find the best place to start? Let's see. We have a guitar, mm-hmm. and we have an electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And somebody could go, okay, I'm going to put a DI, which is a direct injection, a direct output of the guitar going to a track. So you record the track, the guitar direct. Mm-hmm. And let's say okay, so you record that guitar direct. Then
and
you
by the way, you're recording the output of the pickup on the electric guitar,
right?
Directly into your recorder.
Yeah. Now let's move on. So we have that. Then we have two. Then we might put two mics on the amplifier mm-hmm. at a foot. You know, whatever. So on the amp mm-hmm. out in the studio, right? So you might have two mics, one on center, one off, or a dynamic and whatever. Then you might, or you might have a single or a single mic on the amp mm-hmm. at six inches to a foot. And then you might have another microphone further back, say at six feet to 8 feet.
Mm-hmm. So which would pick up more of the room if there is any room sound at all.
Which there will be, hopefully, if it's a decent room. And then I actually go as far as recording a room mic, stereo room mic. Mm. So a single guitar, you know, it's like you get the direct, you have the close mic amp, you get the semi-distant, and then you get the actual room mic in stereo. So if you're mixing in surround, you can actually take that stereo pickup, put those in the rear. You know, then you have a big room sound. So you can do all sorts of things with all of this. Mm-hmm. But then let's go further. Then there's the idea of room simulation. Speaking of Alan Seitz, back to Alan Seitz again, mm-hmm. with Ocean Way. So there's the Ocean Way plugin on the Universal UAD2, on Universal Audio's UAD2. So there's a plugin which will simulate his room. So now if you have you can take that pickup, that direct, the actual whatever, and then you can put the Ocean Way in the rear speakers if you want to have that, or in the stereo if you're mixing stereo. It doesn't matter. You mm-hmm. know, you're creating this sense of space and stuff. So, you know, and then again, you had the direct pickup. now on workstations, on DAWs, there are plugins where you can simulate amplifiers. So you can choose your amp, choose your speaker, you know, do all that stuff. And you could do that in the box. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. And it's really quite cool because when you get to the mix, there are a lot of things you can play with in the truest sense of the word play.
Mm. This all reminds me, getting back to your latest project, Gamma, of something that I read on your website about adding the drums. You did that at a studio called London Bridge Studio in Seattle. Right. And we actually have a picture of London Bridge Studio there that we can show people if we can find it. There it is.
Yeah, it's an old beautiful 1980s Neve. Yeah,
Neve console, beautiful. Now you recorded drums there in particular for this album, and we have a picture of setting up the drums. And I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit. But I also wanted to point to make sure that everybody understood that one of the other pictures I sent up there was called Quad Mic, which is actually, I believe, as I recall, that was your room mic. You actually recorded the room in quad, in four channels.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about this whole drum thing that you did.
Well, I mean, you know, it's an electronic project, right? And so there are, you know, there are all sorts of electronic drums, and everything's timed perfectly, and everything's, you know, hopefully not. I try to keep as organic as I can, and so I don't sit there working and making everything absolutely perfect. But when you do live drums, and one thing is, I never use drummers. I always use percussionists.
What's the difference?
One is dum dum dum, you know, whereas the other is a percussionist is more of like the idea of something belongs here, but some things may not belong there. Let's add this. It's the idea of nuance, of working more than just, you know, a rock drummer flailing around throwing as much as you can at a kid, you know,
which would
destroy everything. So I will often be out there conducting the drummers, like, add this now, add that now, da 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 da, hold back, chill out, all right, calm down, take a pill, and then you come back in. But the drums add a sense of life, of course. It adds a sense of human to something that is otherwise. You know, I do a lot of live performance stuff in the mixes and stuff, but, you know, there is a lot of electronics, so you want to introduce as much human as you can. And drums are a cool way to do it. And plus, you get to hang out in the studio.
Indeed. And as I said, you had that quad microphone in probably far from the drum kit in that studio in order
to... It's an amazing room because that room is known for its drum, renowned for its drum sound. Excuse me, because, you know, it's like they're who didn't record there in the grunge stuff in the 80s? They all did. It's like they all.
This is Seattle after all.
Excuse me, it is Seattle after all. And so it's known for its drum sound. So you're going to use that room.
Yeah. Reverb Mike in the chat room is asking, isn't this what you're doing kind of like Larry Levine and Phil Spector's Wall of Sound?
Whoever Larry Levine is, and I don't know. I'm just doing my stuff. I don't try to do anybody's sound. I just do what I do.
Well, yeah, certainly the Phil Spector Wall of Sound is a fairly well-known thing that he did.
Well, actually, that's a problem that I have. As the wall of sound, it's like often my partner will say, back off, back off, back off, not so much. You know, pull things back, because sometimes you can create this wall of sound, which is simply overpowering, and you just want to back off and let areas have chill out and stuff like that, and let it tell its story. So, you know, if I'm creating a wall of sound, then all of a sudden I start getting into trouble.
Right. Okay. Well, I wanted to talk a bit about how you recorded this project in a variety of locations. We saw the London Bridge Studio, which is in Seattle. There's also your home studio called Raven Bear, I believe.
Oh, I just called it that. But yeah, what the hell? You know, it's like,
and I think, is that where you're sitting now?
Yeah, well, we're in the Northwest. Yeah, this is your that. Yeah, and you
that
see my babies, my PMCs, which I'm a PMC man, and
those are the speakers. Those are the speakers, by the way.
Yeah, and those are quite the babies. And, you know, I was like, I got those, and then I'll never need another pair of speakers ever again. I'm done. Mm. But
are those powered speakers, active speakers?
Yeah, they are, and they're pretty, oh, my God. I don't want to talk too much about them. They're oh, my God. That's all I will say.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you also did some work in Berlin, Germany, and we have two graphics here. And I want you to explain this, because when I got these graphics, I didn't understand. They're in a hotel?
They're one in is.
The Enhow Hotel.
Exactly. And you pronounce that. I think they call it now. And every American will say Enhow, and they say now. It's like, what the hell?
The silent H. All right.
Who cares? Because it's always confusing.
Now, how can there be a studio in a hotel? I don't get that.
It's amazing. Do you have that next shot?
I think so.
Oh, no. There's a...
Oh, no. I don't have the one of looking out the window. I'm sorry. I don't have that one.
So go back to the previous shot then. It's really amazing. In Berlin for Ashley, I don't... do a thing at a home. I live in Berlin as well. So I live in Seattle and I also live in Berlin. Mm. And Berlin is another home. And this hotel is on the Spree, which is a river which just runs everywhere in Berlin. You can't get away from the Spree. The river's everywhere. Mm. And this hotel is a major, oh my God, you can see it's a hotel from hell. It's a major hotel that literally the studio actually juts out on the sixth floor it's the eighth floor over the water. So that there are all the windows which actually overlook the river and overlook the city. And so you're actually floating out over the river, and it's truly amazing. And and I will use that studio for doing performances for the Berlin Mix performances and stuff, and just doing that stuff there. It's run by a very, very close friend of mine, and it's another home of mine. But I actually have an apartment in Berlin, so I love Berlin, so that's home for me.
Well, yeah. And you refer to some of the we're going to talk in a minute about all the different mixes that you created for this project. One of which is called the Berlin Mix. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. First of all, I want to finish our world tour here. The studio that you did sort of, I guess, the final mixing in is in Belgium. It's called Galaxy Studios, and it's owned, I guess, and operated by Oro, the company that gives us Oro 3D immersive audio, which is what you used in one of your mixes here. So tell us a little bit about Galaxy.
Right. Galaxy is another home, quite literally. There are certain number of us in Europe that call Galaxy home and are family to Galaxy. And Wilfred, who actually owns the facility, an amazing man. And my releases, both Parallax Eden and Gamma, are out on the Oro Creative label. So obviously I'm connected with, I'm not an employee or anything like that. I'm connected. The studio... basically Wilfred is like a patron. He gets what I do. He loves what I do. He loves that I work in immersive, and I sort of push the envelope and they put it out on their label, and it's a tremendous amount of fun. And they let me mix in one of the best rooms in Europe. Mm-hmm. It's truly an astounding. That is also PMC. Back at Galaxy, it's all PMC speakers Yeah, if you go back to the picture, if you would, and the big console, do I use that console? Absolutely not. It's a great big monitor control. I do everything in the box, of course.
In the
computer. It's just too difficult. It's just impossible to do. I've tried doing my mixes on a big board, and it always ends up being super inferior.
Don't you need some sort of physical control surface to actually manipulate sliders and what have you? You don't need to manipulate pan pots, obviously, because you're not panning. But
Right. But they're stereo tracks. So I just do the, I'm a Mouseketeer. I use mouse, I use them. Everybody tried to get away from mice. It's like, I can't find anything that's remotely better than mice, except for here. I have, they're both touch screens. These are both touch screens that are.
Wow. So look at just, that.
I'll just, and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I'm so a
your,
little,
is
I'm,
your control surface, the lower screen there, that's mostly your control surface.
Yeah. Okay. It's not completely set up yet because I haven't installed the software properly for the Raven, which is part of the Raven Bear thing. I have two Ravens in this room. It's a funny story.
What are Ravens?
Birds.
Oh, the actual bird.
They're birds, Scott. No, I'm joking with you. Because you go, what are ravens? And the answer would be completely meaningless. These are both Raven controllers. And then I have a Raven keyboard over here, which is the first Deutsche Raven into the U.S. And so I ended up with all these Ravens around. So Ravens had to be part of the name, right?
I gotcha. All right.
Right.
So and, it's the name of a product, of a piece of equipment.
It is, but it's a touch controller that is designed for workstations. And so here, again, let me bring up come on, baby, you can do it. come on, baby, you can do it. 3, 2, 1. Thank you. So here you have your waveform. There's the national word, but my brain is giving out.
So the
waveform thing, but here's the mixer, and this follows a complete, it's hard to see on your thing, but here's the mixer thing. So you can, once I get the new software done, you can control everything completely with your hand. You can put 6 fingers on it, all that stuff, and do everything and see. Fly all over the place, and it's really, really quite cool. But this layout is a traditional console layout, mixer, waveform screen, right. So you'd be amazed that nobody uses this layout. I've only met a handful of people who use this layout. It's like, duh, hello. It makes perfect sense.
So when you go to Galaxy Studios in Belgium, you're not using their wonderful console. You're using this system that you just showed us a little bit of.
I am. It's much simpler. I'm just using the mouse, and we load it onto their Macs and stuff, and off you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, listen, SoCal Ray Jr. In the chat room is asking something here. You obviously recorded or mixed this new project and the one before, as you said, in Oro 3D, which is an immersive system along the same lines as Dolby Atmos and DTS:X. And SoCal Ray Jr. is asking, because there are so many more products that decode Atmos and DTS:X compared to Oro, why did you choose Oro?
Well, SoCal Ray, because I'm mixing in Galaxy Studios, really. It's like they invented Oro, and I'm going and they wanted the Oro mix on the stuff, and it's on the Creative Oro label. So I'm going to do it in Oro.
Well, that makes sense. Of course.
And as far as I'm concerned, that does not preclude the idea of not doing, in the future, not doing a Dolby Atmos mix in addition. I think it makes a lot of sense. A good friend of mine, Morton Lindbergh, Morton does stuff, with the Oro, with the Atmos, with all the different things on the Blu-ray, and has the different ones. That makes perfect sense to me. But they're trying to get content out, and I'm happy to help them get the content out. Mm-hmm. And also mixing in Oro Atmos, they're entirely two different animals. And for music, actually, Oro makes a lot of sense because the channels are literally channels. There's no computer steering in the background. It is channel based in Oro. Mm-hmm. So it actually works really, really well for music. So it made perfect sense to me.
Well, especially if you're not doing really any panning. Because with object oriented like Atmos and DTS:X in its in its origination software called MDA, multidimensional audio, you know, you can pan things around and the objects move around, but you're not doing that. And in fact, what you're doing does sound more channel-based, which means that Aura would be more appropriate for what you're doing.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. There is no mouse flying across the room or something like that. So,
even though you're a mouseketeer,
when I get angry, and you know, no, I'm joking.
Yeah. Okay, well, I want to talk a little bit about the different mixes because you have the music on this album is in 2-channel, 5.1, and Oro 3D immersive. Not only
9.1.
that, it's 5.1, yeah, and 9.1. is Aura 3D, some often called. Not only that, but you've got what you call the original mix, the Berlin mix, and the chill mix, which are amazingly different. I want to play two clips here, which are one of the tracks from Gamma called Lumina, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's the original mix. We'll just play half a minute of it. Very good. And next, the chill mix of the same tune. Good. Now, it's hard to imagine those are the same tune. They're totally different. They sound completely different. Explain yourself.
Explain. What the hell are you doing, Huber? What the hell are you doing? You know, it's like everybody. Okay, so everybody says, all right, fine. You know, for example, on a Blu-ray, because I did the Blu-ray, right? And and everybody goes, you know, Huber has to be different. That's just the way it goes. But everybody else just goes, you know, the stereo mix, let's do the 5.1 mix of the same thing. Let's do the 9.1 mix of the same thing. Let's call it good. It's all done. Mm-hmm. And of course I go, why? Does that make any sense whatsoever? You know, you're getting the disc. It's like, and there are all these different ones. I do different mixes. Let's introduce the different mixes. The one thing on the Blu-ray is, of course, all the timings have to be exactly right for the same ones to go from the different streams. But you get those timings right within that. Boom, off, you can do anything you want. And so in this case, because I have the disc here. So the you know, on the remote control, there are the different buttons, right? And so the yellow button is the stereo version of the Berlin remix. The green button is the stereo version of the chill mix. The red button is the 5.1 of the Berlin remix, which, by the way, wish me luck this year. I'm entering it into the Grammy nominee process.
Oh, best of luck. Absolutely.
I've gotten 4 nominations before. We will see. Although I think that a bunch of Beatles stuff is up this year, which means you have no chance in hell. Mm. But And then there's the blue button, which is the 9-1 Oro mix of the original mix. And I was fine with doing that, the 9.1 of the original mix being a different mix, because how many people have a 9.1 system in their home, right?
Not that many.
Practically nobody. So when you play it back, it will perfectly downmix to 5.1. It actually doesn't downmix. It just automatically, it does its thing, and it just comes out being 5.1. So there is no computational process. It's really simple and straightforward. So it actually plays back in 5.1. So you have two different 5.1 tracks, essentially, you know, unless you happen to have a 9.1. Unless you have a Ferrari from hell, right?
Well, this was SoCal Ray's point. You know, that not very many people have Oro systems or an AVR or a pre-pro that can decode Oro.
This could change. It plays back in 5.1 just fine. Yeah. You know, so.
Okay. All right. And all those streams are all on the Blu-ray.
Yep. But as you saw, you know, you just had the screen up and stuff. So I actually put the different mixes on. I use Bandcamp, because Bandcamp rocks. Bandcamp is really awesome. I sell my music through Bandcamp stuff because their coding is really, really rock solid. A lot of the music sites, you'll go on and things just break and doesn't work. And their coding is really solid. And you can add additional material. So what I did is when you buy each of the mixes, and I do have them separately for sale as different mixes. For example, you buy the Berlin remix. You get the stereo mix, but you can download and it's $24.96. You can download $24.96 FLAC. You can download in all these different high res file formats. Bandcamp just doesn't care. You know, it'll do it properly, and so you get the high res stuff. But you go on and you go on to the additional material, and I have the actual 5.1 mixes in FLAC, and $24.96 FLAC are on there as well. So you get all these mixes. You know, I've worked my butt off for them and stuff. So. And it was a lot of fun, but a lot of work.
I'm sure, especially if you remix, every mix is new and different. That takes some time.
Yeah.
Hamid asked early in on, and I wanted to kind of wait until we got to this point. You just mentioned 2496 high-res audio. He asked, you know, what sample rate and bit depth is it at? We just answered that question, 24 bits, 96 kilohertz. And I wanted to ask you how you felt. I mean, obviously you think that high-res audio is worthwhile. There are those who don't, who say that, 16-bit, 44.1 is perfectly fine. It captures everything you need to capture. Why do you need to go higher than that?
Okay, you're talking to the right guy. This is a horrible, horribly hard question. I want to use all sorts of expletives and just break out into expletives right now.
Just remember, this is a family show. So
exactly. Yeah. And therefore I didn't.
Thank you.
particularly from my standpoint, because I'm an electronic musician. And what do electronic musicians do? They create libraries, often loop libraries. So, you know, I'll have loops, so I'll have original material, I'll have MIDI stuff, I'll have, you know, all sorts of things mixed up. But there is a library. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have libraries, my library goes back 15 years, you know, 10, 15 years. So 10 years ago, were people talking 2496? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? It was 4416, you know?
Right.
So do I go back and recreate my entire, you know, do they simply say, you have to go back and redo everything and throw everything else in the trash? No, you're not going to do that. It would take years to do that. And you wouldn't be able to do it properly, you know? And so let me set that one thing aside. The idea of for those of us who have a library, you know, let's set that idea completely aside, and because it's a big one. But if you, for It's a huge one. But if you're recording a light, if you're recording, a jazz band, or if you're recording a orchestra or something like that, 2496 or higher, who cares? You're recording it, then you mix it, and it's done, you know? But you're not creating this library for your own personal future use. It's a whole different thing. Mm. So that's a huge part of the dilemma. And then now let's go to the quality side. I completely know both sides of the coin more than anybody might know. And you know, can you get killer audio at 4416 or at 4424? The answer is absolutely yes. But you have to choose your equipment properly. And you know, if there's one thing, you know, that I know about audio interfaces is that every single one sounds different. Every mm-hmm. single one sounds different. You know, and you look at the specification, you know, the worst thing you can ever do is look at digital specifications on paper. It's just you never look at digital specs on paper because digital specs always, always, always lie. Mm. There is no exception. It'll always lie. And, you know, you have to hear it. You have to hear it. And so I, you know, my interface that I'm using, right, I'm using a Steinberg interface because it's so multi-dimensionally, multi-channel, multi-output friendly, unlike most. And also it just sounds awesome. But I got their new interface. I got the new interface and it turns out that it doesn't work as well as the old one. So I sold the new one and got the old one back. Mm. I had to eBay my old one back, you know, and stuff. And I went back a generation to a one that works better for me. And I super hand choose these things.
Right. Based upon what they sound like as well as what their capabilities are.
Exactly. Exactly. And always, you know, it's like I'll always take sound over capabilities, but when it has sound and capabilities, yeah, baby. You know, and a lot of the new ones are just like, you know, don't even want to talk surround at all. It's like people who do gaming, people who do films, people who do that. It's like they don't even care they exist. It's like so stupid. Anyway, don't get me going. And so, right. And so but at 4416, you know, or 4424, you know, you always better to go 24 than 16. Let's just say that one for, and also 4416 and 4424. If you're working at 24 and a 16 file is in there, it doesn't care. The workstation will just go fine. You know, 16 and 24 files mixed in with each other doesn't care. Just
no problem.
Totally fine. So just go 24.
Right.
And
by the way, before you continue, there's been a question in the chat room about what those numbers mean. So let me just quickly say, 24 is the number of bits per sample of audio. And the more bits you have, the greater the dynamic range you can represent. And the 96 or the 44 is actually 44.1 is the sampling rate. Somebody asked about it being, the upper limit of the frequency. And it determines that, but it's not that. That's the rate at which these samples are being taken. And so 96 is 96,000 samples per second, 96 kilohertz. 44.1 is 44.1 kilohertz or 44,100 samples per second. And that lets you reproduce frequencies up to half that. It's called the half that frequency is called the Nyquist frequency. And so 96 lets you record higher frequencies than 44.1. In fact, 96 lets you record frequencies that are above the human hearing range. And this is one question for you, David. If you can record frequencies higher than humans can hear, what's the point?
Well, who cares about that? It's like the Grammy organization and this and that organization wants to do, it's really pushing 2496. And what's the real reason why they're pushing 2496? They want to be able to reissue, they want to be able to sell more records. It's another thing like, you know, high res, buy more, you know, buy
gotta
the new
buy
thing.
Gotta buy the White Album again.
Got to do it all over again. And, you know, that's really, you know, but, you know, and again, back to the, I'm going to try to do this fast, but it's like back to the original, you know, 4424, mm-hmm. you know, can you record at 4424? Well, yes. If you have a really good interface, a killer interface at 4424 will sound better than a bad interface at 2496.
Good point.
However, if you have a killer interface running at 2496, and I say this now from complete experience because of my libraries, I've had my original files and I've been going back because they're MIDI. I go back to the actual instruments and you compare. So it's MIDI. So you actually have the original file, the original one that you recorded 12 years ago. And then, you know, not many people had this opportunity. You know, the one that you recorded 12 years ago, right alongside the one you did at 2496. And is there a difference? Yes, there's a real difference. Interestingly enough, I did a transfer yesterday, and I actually liked the original sound file better. It's the first time that ever happened. On a lot of other ones, it's like the difference is night and day. You'll record off of a synth, you know, on the 2496, it just shines out. It becomes more real. I could sit here and sound like an advertisement, but it's true. But it was interesting that I listened yesterday. And it's like, well, I actually like the original. But the original had a weird kind of grunge that I actually liked better than the cleaner version.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. So, never forget the fact that it's a sales ploy. However, you know, and nothing is more important than the music. However, does it make a difference? It does. But am I going to go back and redo my entire library? Absolutely not. You know, the up samples will have to exist alongside the originally re-recorded, you know, actual, you know, 2496 and stuff. You just do the best you can.
Hamid is asking, you know, we can only hear up to 20 kilohertz and most microphones can't detect or accept.
It's not all about
frequencies higher than that.
Yeah, but it's not all about that. It's not, you know, you can't just go, oh, it's just about the upper frequency limit. It's not. It's about the, you know, we actually skipped over the conversion process pretty fast. You know, we could spend this entire hour talking about sample rates.
Yes.
And God knows I don't want to, but you know, we could.
Maybe we'll have you back to do that, but let's just touch upon it now.
Yeah, you know, but it you know, it's like taking pictures. You know, you go you know, the faster the pictures you have, the more resolution you have, not in a sense, in an actuality, and so that's not your, you know, so that upper range, that upper range thing that has next to nothing to do with it. It has not actually nothing to do with it. It's the resolution of what's within the range, and in the end, what it's about is the quality of the capturing of that sound is what it's about. So it's nothing to do with like how high you're hearing. That's running down the wrong trail, really.
I've always thought of it as, yeah, you can't hear anything above 20 kilohertz. In fact, you and I, being the age that we are, can't even hear up to 20 kilohertz. No one can, but babies, really.
Actually, I'm pretty good.
Well, you might be good. You might be better than most. But, you know, 20K is like the total maximum
humans
can really hear. So we can't. You can capture more than 20K, higher than 20K, with 96 kilohertz sampling rate, but you won't hear it. What you will, what you can do as a technician though, is to apply a more gentle filter on it, because you don't want to record. You don't want any sounds above half the sampling frequency. To get in, because then you'll get really bad artifacts that are obviously audible and really horrible. So you want to filter them out. So if you record at 44.1 or 48, you have to have a very steep filter. But with 96, you can have a more gentle filter. And that itself might affect how the overall sound of the file is. Do you agree?
You know, the actual answer is I don't care. You know, I really don't care. It's about, you know.
Hey, what kind of geek are you anyway?
I don't. I don't care. What it is, what it is how does it sound? And, you know, and is there a difference? And the difference is, you know, I'm completely the naysayer. I have held out for years and years and years and years until I started doing it. And then it's like, oh, my God. There's a huge difference. And sonically, you know, I'm not sitting here worrying about the numbers. I'm not sitting here calculating. Who could care? But sonically, there's a big difference. And that in the end, you know, that's you know.
That's the bottom line. Yeah, I agree with you.
That and everybody else pressuring the hell out of me to, come on, Dave.
I have to mention to you, I did an informal experiment on AVS Forum a couple of years ago now, where I got three recordings from Mark Waldrop at AIX Records, who's a very, very smart, good engineer. He's been on the show a number of times.
Yeah.
And he records everything at 2496.
Yeah.
So I got three tracks from him at 2496. We very carefully downsampled them to 16441.
Yeah.
Within a 2496 envelope, so that when you looked at the file on a computer, it would look like it was 2496. I labeled them A and B, and I let anybody who wanted to download them, play them, and tell me which one they thought was the true high res. And I said, also, when you send me your results, tell me what kind of system you have. And I could tell from that whether the system was capable of reproducing frequencies above 20K was really mostly what I was looking at. Of the systems, of the people who sent back their results and they did not have high-res audio capable systems, that is, their systems couldn't go above 20K, their correct rate was right around 50%. You know, as you would expect by chance. Of those who had high-res, true high-res capable systems, speakers and amps and everything that could go above 20K, their correct rate was 80%.
Wow. That's
so
pretty cool.
That tells you something. Now, it's not scientific. It was not statistically significant. I think I had 50 or 60 responses total. So, you know, it was just a fun experiment. But I found that very telling.
Yeah, it really is interesting. So it really is, and it's also the reverbs and stuff like that. You know, everything has to work harder. You know, of course, the whole system has to work harder. You get like you said, you get 80 tracks going, and you get, you know, all the effects going, and everybody has to work harder. But still, in the end, it's a really, really cool thing. And also, you know, I suffer from, you know, I don't suffer from geekdom, but I do suffer from perfectionism. You know, it's like we can always make this better, you know, which can just drive you into the ground if you're not careful. And you know, that's the one that I have to worry about. But, you know, it's like and that going back to the mixes and up doing them to 2496 was quite the journey, really. And it was quite cool. A hell of a lot of work, but I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a remarkable achievement. I look forward to hearing the whole thing in an Oro room with the immersive sound system. I haven't heard it there yet, but I certainly intend to, because I love chill out music, and you're doing some really wonderful stuff there.
And make sure you do the Berlin remixes. Those are the ones that you know.
Oh yeah, that's right. And I wanted to just touch upon that briefly. The Berlin remixes. What's special about those? Why did you call them that, and why did you create them?
Well, it's, you know, Berlin is known for dance music, and it's an actual step up. There are actual loops that I put in, and I go into I'm not wearing this because of, you know, but it's just because it goes into Ableton Live. And so the actual mix is we'd have to probably longer than we have time to answer, because this one's a long one in and of itself. It's a process, again, that nobody else does. And the wonderful thing about Ableton Live is there, you know, you put a room full of 20 people, how many, and they will all use Ableton Live in a different way. I love that. Mm-hmm. And again, I am no exception, but I go onto the iPad and you can actually perform it live.
We actually have a picture called Ableton that we should be able to see here. And you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So they're on, you know, on the left-hand side. So on the left-hand side is the screen. And so on now on the right-hand side of this screen. No. Stay right there. Stay right there, dude. You're doing just fine. On the on the right-hand where you see the white ones, you see the white tracks. Those are the actual continual tracks of the original mixes. And then on the left of literally the original mix, and then on the left hand side of that screen are the different color ones, and that you get the color, you know, and that's where you can see on you get the names and stuff, and you see those on your iPad, and you can actually you literally perform it on a stage in the studio however you want to do, and you know, and there's and it you know, that was the quickest thing, but it's really quite complicated, you know. It takes a long time to make this. You don't just throw it in. It's pretty complicated. But
so
but
the, then what, the Berlin mixes the work, are really for more like for live performance. Then
it's for live performance, but it can be a studio thing. It can be both. And you can actually perform it in 2.0, 4.0, or 8.0. So if somebody said, Dave, you have a performance in 2 hours and eight, you have a performance in 10 minutes and 8.0, I'll be going, okay, I think I can do it. Mm. And, you know, and it's sort of nuts. But then you get the iPad. Now on the right-hand side of the screen is the iPad, which is touchable, which is another Berlin company. And my layout looks quite different than that. But you actually touch the buttons, and you actually can perform. So you literally perform it. So it's really cool. And then that performance, you know, you capture that performance into Ableton. And then you pull the performance back into the studio, and then you can actually go through and recreate the original original stage performance in the recording. That becomes the Berlin remix.
Okay. So yeah. There's a ton of different ways to listen to your music, which is one of the things I find so fascinating by it. You can take different versions based upon your mood. You know, if you want to chill, you can chill. If you want to be a little more active, you can do that too. It's remarkable and really great.
Thank you, kind sir.
We're reaching the end of the show here, and Chumley is asking, I may have missed it, but where can I get some of his work?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Chumley. You rock. Thanks. So at the bottom of the screen there, you see davidmileshuber.com. That's where you can do everything, right? You do everything on the website. So davidmileshuber.com. If you're lazy, 51bpm.com. Davidmileshuber.com. And you can go on and you can click those. That's where you actually record, where you download the Bandcamp mixes. So you do the Bandcamp stuff. I will tell you, know, I put $25 on them on each one, but each one actually contains, when you buy the stereo mixes, you also get the 5.1 mixes all in high res. And I just worked my butts off on it. But then you can go to the, and get Gamma's available. Gamma and Parallax Eden are both available through Amazon, which I guess is where everybody buys Blu-rays now. That's they just put it on Amazon. That's where people get Blu-rays. I guess that's what they do.
That's what they do. Yeah, and it's on Blu-ray pure audio, which means there isn't very much, if any, video other than menus and stuff like that. Right.
Exactly.
There's a picture of the Blu-ray. In fact, I had on the show some time ago Rob Abbey, who used to work for Sony and was working on the Pure Audio project. So,
Stefan in Deutschland, so Stefan created the Pure Audio thing, and so it's really quite cool. You just put it in, it's just a audio player, a high res audio player for Blu-ray. Yeah.
Well, hey, we've come to the end of a fascinating hour. I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom with us.
It would be fun to come back and cause trouble. I think we have
lot of fun. Excellent. Yeah, we got so much more to talk about. So absolutely. Yeah. I'll have you back. Be happy to do that.
Thank you everybody for taking the time and listening to me go on and just an absolute blast. It's fun with you guys. It's great.
Good. Thank you so much. That's David Miles Huber. You can find out much more and order his music at davidmileshuber.com or 51bpm.com, which refers to the tempo, the down tempo, chill nature of a lot of his music. You can always find me at avsforum.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at AVSForum. You can always find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here at twit.tv/HTG, or on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twit/HomeTheaterGeeks. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be David Abrams. He's a calibrator, and I've been working with him on the LG C7 OLED TV. So that's what we're going to be talking about, and I do hope you will join us. Until then, chill out.